Hello, this is Janice Marie Hunt, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the October and November 2025 issue of the Polish American Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Two more giants pass. After hearing bad news about a friend's death, a house fire, auto accident, or any other calamity, my mother would say she was afraid to pick up the telephone for fear of hearing more bad news. If she were alive today, I'm sure that would change to afraid to look at her iPhone. Last month, we told you of the passing Reverend Krysa and Kolowski, two folks who dedicated their lives to our heritage. In the past month, we've learned of two more passings, Robert STRYBEL and Professor Thad Gromada. Their obituaries are included in this month's edition. Stas Kimmick has authored a tribute to Gromada. Apparently, sensing his mortality, wrote his own obituary months ago. Over the past decade, a copy would arrive at our office via email, a method unimaginable from my first encounter with his news service in 1981. At that time, his columns, photos, and other press material arrived in large envelopes from Poland. The copy was hand-typed and then copied for each newspaper that bought his service. My job was to retype it, as office scanners were conceptual at best at that time. When marital law was enacted in 1981, correspondences were scrutinized by communist censors who almost always unsuccessfully tried to hide the fact they were monitoring mail to the United States. One envelope suspiciously resembled including an empty pack of Popularon cigarettes, government forms, and a magazine, none of which were in the package when it left. It was during this period Stryber became Polonelski's most important Ritter's employee. While news trickled in from major agencies, Stryber was in the trenches reporting firsthand every facet of the Solidarity movement. Stryber kept his post during the reborn Polish Republic's infancy. He brought news of privatizations, investments, and groundbreaking legislation that created what is now one of Europe's powerhouses. But those changes were coupled with deviations in what was considered normal before communists occupied Warsaw's government offices. Poland, once again a part of the European community, slowly accepted liberal policies, many of which were in direct opposition to the church. Stryber saw this as a threat to the Polish way of life. He pushed back, never quite accepting the adage that you can't go home again. I understand fully. Some, me included, considered him a C-U-R-M-U-D-G-E-O-N, a title he accepted with a laugh. You are always free to edit my copy as you see fit, he would remind me. I will not remember him that way. No one should. He was a defender of a Poland we all knew and loved in spite of its changes. Perhaps he knew this when he wrote his own obituary. Please take the time to read it. We lost a great one. I have to admit, my relationship with Thad Gromada was initially not based on his incredible academic credentials, but on a mutual love for Highlander music. Following a mid-year meeting of the Polish American Historical Association at what was then Buffalo's Polish Community Center, Gromada was egged on by board members to lead a sing-along. Mind you, I was new to the circle and thought pedagogies retired us in continued debate over glasses of sherry. Gramada obliged and led the assembly in song. I stood in quiet amazement, thinking the walls of the former Don Poliski building have not reverberated with these melodies in decades. Again, this was a whole new world to me. These people were famous authors and college professors. They've attended conferences across the globe, but they also knew the harmonies of G-O-R-A-H-I, E-Z-Y-C-I-N-I-E-Z-A-L, and all of the verses. These were my kind of people. After the mid-year meeting in Buffalo, I became PAHA's treasurer, a title the late Joseph described as the most underappreciated job in all of Polonia. The compensation, however, was the contact I now had with PAHAS and by association, PIASA's elite and incalculable asset to a young editor. Gramada and PAHA board became my go-to people. Gramada gave me a complimentary subscription, the Tatra Eagle, the quarterly publication about Goral culture he and his sister produced. We corresponded by email, and I must admit his words of encouragement kept me going on more than one occasion. He was brilliant and kind, and I will miss him. Devils, Demons, and Fiends. Polish culture features numerous devils, demons, and fiends rooted in Slavic folklore. In modern context, devils, demons, and fiends often refers to fictional characters or entities with supernatural powers, typically associated with evil or malevolence. They are often portrayed in stories, games, and movies, but the specific interpretations and distinctions can vary. Witches. Herbalists and healing women were known throughout Poland in the 18th century. They were slowly replaced by a new Western European representation. Witches and sorcerers were people who willingly gave themselves to the devil so that in return he would lend them his secret knowledge. They carefully protected their herbal and medical skills, passing them on before death only to people they chose. Initially, witches in the folk consciousness, like devils, were not perceived as dangerous. They aroused fear, but the rural population often turned to them for help in the event of problems on the farm. According to the church, this created diabolical forces of hell standing in its opposition. It was a solid basis for the witch hunt that was very advanced in the West. Although not reaching such a large scale in Poland, it was still a terrifying practice. According to historian, approximately 10,000 people accused of witchcraft under final judgments were burned at the stake or died under torture. Lynchings carried out by the rural population killed 5,000 to 10,000 innocent people. Anyone could be accused. It was easy to find evidence of such a crime. It was enough that their neighbors' witches' hens laid more eggs for the other housewife to accuse her of casting a spell on her own hens, which laid fewer. Neighborly tensions and misunderstandings in the community led to constant denunciations, mutual grudges, and accusations. A woman collecting herbs or milking a cow after dark would arouse suspicion, although one day her knowledge could save someone from illness and death. The next, it was the result of satanic activities and conniving with the devil. It was claimed that women with bloodshot or festering eyes were certainly witches, so most people with eye problems were suspected of this. Every new Thursday, the Thursday falling during the new moon, sorcerers and witches would set off on a journey to Lysa Gora. Lysa Gora was located in different places and did not have a uniform appearance. On such, a devil would sit and other devils, ghosts, witches, and sorcerers would fly to them for a feast. He would throw a large, lavish party with a huge amount of food that no one except the invited guests could eat. The sounds of fun and revelry attracted people whom the devil would persuade to sign pacts, thereby gaining new souls. For all their deeds and spells, witches used formulas passed on to them by devils, which, if pronounced incorrectly or twisted by even one word, became completely useless. Properly collected herbs, ashes, and bones stolen from cemeteries, and even tangles or fingernails taken from the dead were concocted with the appropriate spells or signs, mixed with vodka or other infusions. They were used with the date of birth of the person on whom the spell was to bring death or illness to or bewitch. Known herbs used to cast spells were impatiens. When used at midnight, it touched open all locks, padlocks, and bolts. The impatiens herb was used in folk medicine for kidney stones and bladder ailments. It was also applied externally to treat hemorrhoids. Crushed shoots helped with bruises and wounds and also soothed the effect of natal burns. Raw shoots cause nausea. Savin juniper is an herb that allows sorcerers to float in the air and fly. It was used as a medicinal plant mainly for making ointments that warmed the skin and for abortive purposes, which often resulted in the death of the woman. Bryonia was used to fumigate cattle to increase the milk production of cows. Buckthorn is a purgative herb that stimulates intestinal paresthesis. Decoctions forms its fruit were used for chronic constipation. Creamwort, common turnip, had anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, and disinfectant properties. In addition to casting spells and using herbal medicine, witches had other ways of performing spells. They could cast a spell with their eyes or curse someone with just a touch or even a breath. Warlocks who harmed someone with their spells usually had the ability to reverse the spell and heal the injured party. A more powerful sorcerer could remove a spell from another sorcerer's victim. It also happened that people had magical powers without any connection to the devil. Young women often extracted information from herbalists they knew about potions and spells that would make a designated young man fall in love with them. Farmers and noblemen came to them with requests for healing, help, or even to summon rain. The line between good and bad magic was thin. Ghosts, also known, were people who had two hearts or two souls. After the death of such a person, one soul or heart died, but the other remained alive, causing such a person to rise from their grave and disturb the local inhabitants. Researchers assert that the belief in ghosts had its roots in old Slavic beliefs and then freely penetrated into Polish Christian demology. Although church dignitaries tried to eradicate the superstition, A kind of renaissance of ghosts was brought about by the literature of the Romantic era. Adam Mickiewicz himself loved to depict the dead rising from the grave in his works. However, his heroes were no longer bloodthirsty beasts, but suffering thinkers who could not find peace after death. This interest in the subject of ghosts made the belief in them popular again, especially in the countryside. Found during archaeological excavations of skeletons in cemeteries were skulls or chests pierced with wooden peg and large iron nails, evidence of how great the fear was of the potential resurrection of the deceased from the grave. The fact that someone could become a ghost after death was indicated by specific features of appearance or behavior. Having two rows of teeth and any malocclusion, misaligned teeth, too pale or too red a face, as well as sleepwalking, indicated that the person could become a ghost. Anyone who died a sudden, brutal death was also considered a potential future ghost. It was usually believed that the ghost's favorite hour was midnight. That was when they would emerge from their graves. They would take on a form similar to their appearance in life, but sometimes more terrifying. The fact that the ghosts left their graves was also associated with crucial or important dates for them, such as the anniversary of their death, the new moon, or holidays. A ghost that rose from its grave most often returned to familiar places and homes, but did not harm anyone. UPIORY would appear to familiar people and, depending on the circumstance, would have a pleasant chat with them or call them names. Ghosts whose missed their families would visit them and help them care for their flocks, but could also display aggressive and brutal behavior. Werewolves. The belief in these beasts probably came to Polish territories from the West. Slavs have always deeply believed in the ability of people to transform into animals. Stories about three types of werewolves were created. People who temporarily transformed into wolves, those permanently transformed into wolves, and those who were transformed into werewolves through spells, curses, or sins they committed during their human life. In the 16th century, in Prussian, Missouri, a man was caught who claimed to be a werewolf. He was said to have transformed into one twice a year. From the descriptions, we know that this individual did indeed have a savage face, long hair, and a body covered in scars. It could be assumed that many people who were perceived as werewolves or who called themselves that were simply suffering from mental illnesses and truly believed that they were bloodthirsty beasts. Deprived of help, misunderstood, and isolated from the community, they stayed in the forest for weeks, and when they returned, they aroused general panic, and their appearance only confirmed the rumors about themselves. Stories about wedding guests being transformed into werewolves by a curse are widely known throughout Poland. There are also stories of witches turning people into werewolves because they felt aversion to them. The most dangerous type of werewolf was a human who became one as a form of penance for sins after death. They usually stood out from other wolves. They were larger and could use human speech. Unlike people cursed, these werewolves were not treated with such tolerance, and their goal was to annihilate them. According to some, such a demon could not be killed by an ordinary bullet. That's why the hunters and the foresters' men dipped their cartridges in holy water. In most cases, animals mistaken for werewolves were wolves with rabies, giving the impression of being terrifying and demonic. death. Plagues and diseases were a common occurrence with terrifying and incomprehensible results. It was believed that diseases were sent to people by demons. One of them was the plague virgin Munro, pestilence. She was depicted as an emaciated woman in a long white dress, sometimes described as an invisible figure. She walked through towns and villages spreading epidemics and various health ailments along with the plague air. Some claim that the morning mist was the merit of these demons, which was supposed to be their long white veil. It was not uncommon for villages to experience lynchings and kill such people accused of witchcraft, believing that this would end the epidemic. From generation to generation, mothers passed on knowledge about the health properties of herbs to their daughters and made sure that at least some of the basic ailments, such as weakness, stomach aches, headaches, or various types of inflammation, could be cured. No demon aroused greater fear in people than death. It was known that it could come unexpectedly and suddenly, taking someone's life without warning. According to oral tradition, the figure of death was originally supposed to wear white robes, not black. There was also a custom of covering a mirror with a white sheet after the death of a household member. Death was considered terrible and ruthless, which is why various ways were invented to become familiar with it. In some regions of Poland, she was given a diminutive feminine name. Death was feared, but at the same time, it was not assessed unequivocally negatively, believing that it was only a tool in the hands of God. It was generally claimed that death stayed close to the dying person in their last moments. Sometimes it was said that the companion of the demon of death was fate, the spirit of destiny, who knew the fate of all people on earth. Each person had their own fate, which stayed with them throughout their life. References to this figure are still alive in Polish proverbs and sayings such as Taka moja dala, such is my fate. And you won't get around your fate with a horse. Christianity replaced this being with the figure of guardian angel, who over time completely replaced the belief in fate. Do these creatures exist today? In some ways, I believe they do. In a world of war, dominance, revenge, cancer, diseases, pandemics, hunger, death, environmental change, unexplained phenomena, scapegoating, immortality, jealousy, and evil. What do you think? You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Polish American Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Polish American Journal Foundation. The Polish American Journal Foundation, a nonprofit 501c3 organization established to promote Polish and Polish American culture and traditions among members of the public and other Polish and Polish American groups. It does this by organizing and supporting special events, networking, and providing consultation to individuals and groups which seek to learn more about the Polish community in the United States. As a national newspaper serving Polish immigrants and their descendants since 1911, the Polish American Journal has a unique perspective on the shortfalls, primarily funding, that have prevented many great projects from getting off the ground. We also have grown increasingly frustrated to see students, future leaders who are passionate about Polonia, seek other areas of study because they could not secure something as simple as airfare to study in Poland or abroad. Likewise, we see so many talented academicians scholars, artists, folk groups, the list goes on, whose special projects or areas of study have been dropped for lack of funds. In many cases, state or federal arts or cultural funding is available, but these groups cannot afford processing fees to meet application requirements. It is time to start helping our own. Membership. Donations are accepted in any amount. All donations will be acknowledged and may be used as charitable contributions on your tax return. As a member, you can suggest any worthwhile cause. A donation to a local Polish American museum, veterans group, scholarship fund, dance group, etc. Our board reviews these suggestions and creates a ballot of the most requested causes recipients, which will then be voted on by current members. Membership is yearly, starting with the date of your most recent donation. All members reserve the right to abstain from being a voting member. Membership level starts at Friend of the PAJF, any amount up to $49.99. Individual, $50. Patron, $500. Benefactor, $1,000. And Chairman Circle, $2,500 or more. Donations of $50 or more entitle the member for a courtesy subscription to the Polish American Journal. If you wish to give this as a gift, please provide recipient's name and address on a separate piece of paper. Since 1911, the Polish American Journal has been an advocate for Poles and their descendants in the United States. Help us utilize over a century of the Polish American experience to support those who share our core values of strong family, faith, and community. Privacy. The PAJF is the sole owner of the information provided by its members. The PAJF will not sell, share, or rent this information to others. It will be used solely for record keeping and correspondence. To learn more or to make a donation, write or call Polish American Journal Foundation, P.O. Box 271, North Boston, New York, 14110. You can call 1-800-422-1275 or 1-716-312-8088 or visit www.polamjournal.com for more information. Again, visit www.polamjournal.com for more information. Chopping Singing Society to hold concert October 19th. The Chopping Singing Society of Buffalo, New York invites you to hear their 126th anniversary concert on October 19th at 2:30 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Church in Buffalo. This year's performance, titled Remembrance, commemorates three significant events in Polish and Polonia history: the 100th anniversary of the Kingdom of Poland, the 500th anniversary of the Perusian homage, and the 150th anniversary of the Felician nuns arriving in the United States. Under the direction of Dr. Brad Wingert, the concert will feature a program of Polish sacred and folk music celebrating the rich culture heritage of Poland. Valerian Rumieniecki, music director of the Nickel City Opera and celebrated opera singer, will join as a guest soloist. Pianist Melanie Bebek will perform piano works, including a piece commissioned by Ivan Dosinsko. Tickets are $10 in advance, $15 at the door and $5 for students. For information and tickets, email choppinsingers716@gmail.com. Second annual Pierogi 5K Run. The Polish American Congress Central Division of New York State will host the second annual Pierogi 5K on October 18th at noon in Schenectady Central Park. Starting from the Thomas E. Isabella Pavilion, 500 Iroquois Way, there's also a youth race beginning at 1 o'clock p.m. The event celebrates Polish American Heritage Month with a fun, family-friendly race that promotes health, community, and Polish culture. Participants are encouraged to donate a food item to benefit the city mission of Schenectady. Registration is $15 in advance, $20 on race day, and $50 for teams for six or more. Sponsorship opportunities are also available. Winners receive a trophy and pierogi, and Polish food will be served before, during, and after the race. More information and sign up are available at www.pierogi5k.org. Drive to assist victims' family, Minneapolis. Friends of Harper Mosky, tragically killed in the school shooting that also claimed the life of another student, have organized a GoFundMe page to help her parents, Mike Mosky and Jackie Flavin, while celebrating Mass at Annunciation Catholic Church in Minneapolis. Both Mosky, 10, and Fletcher Merkel, 8, were killed in a gun attack that also injured 18 people, 15 students and 3 adults. We are devastated to share that our beloved daughter, Harper Mosky, was tragically killed in the recent school shooting, said friend Cody Griggs, on behalf of the Mosky Flavin family. Harper was a bright, joyful, and deeply loved 10-year-old whose laughter, kindness, and spirit touched everyone who knew her. Our hearts are broken, not only as parents, but also for Harper's sister, who adored her big sister and is grieving an unimaginable loss. As a family, we are shattered, and words cannot capture the depth of our pain. We also grieve for our fellow Annunciation family in mourning, and for those hurt on August 27th. We are grateful for the staff and first responders who did so much for so many. Speaking for the Mosky Flavin family, Griggs said, "It is important that her memory fuels action. No family should ever have to endure this kind of pain. We urge our leaders and communities to take meaningful steps to address gun violence and the mental health crisis in this country. Change is possible and it is necessary so that Harper's story does not become yet another in a long line of tragedies. Contributions made to this fund will be utilized by the family in honor of Harper's memory, with a portion donated in Harper's honor to a nonprofit to be identified at a later date. To donate, visit GoFundMe.com and search for Harper Mosky, M-O-Y-S-K-I. A GoFundMe page has also been set up to help the Merkel family. Polish Children's Heartline. Established in 1985, the Polish Children's Heartline is a 501c3 nonprofit volunteer organization which raises money to purchase medical equipment for children's heart surgery in pediatric units throughout Poland. Every year, Over 2,000 procedures are performed in Poland on children with heart problems. In almost 40 years, the Polish Children's Heartline has donated over $20 million worth of medical equipment, saving lives of Polish children's lives. There is still much work to be done, and through your generous donations, we will continue to save many. Because if we don't help our Polish children, who will? Please contact us for further information. Area code 732-680-0680 or area code 609-290-7191. Polish Children's Heartline, 177 Broadway, Clark, New Jersey, 07066. Mailing address, 87 Deerfield Drive, Monahawkin, New Jersey, 08050. Website, www.polishchildrensheartline.org. The Bosom of America is open to receive not only the opulent and respected stranger, but the oppressed and persecuted of all nations and religions, whom we shall welcome to a participation of all our rights and privileges. George Washington. Debbie's Photos of Poland, www.polishfamily.com. Join Polish Genius for genealogy help. Saluting Polish American Heritage Month, Sacred Heart White Eagle Society, Greenfield, Massachusetts. We thank our ancestors for coming to America. Polish Heritage Committee of Northampton, Massachusetts, www.polishheritagenorthampton.org. We salute Polish American citizens. Heritage Month greetings, Bernadette and Richard Narog, Yonkers, New York. Nazi ideology and the oppression of Poles in World War II. This year's essay, 2025 marks the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz Nazi death camp in the suburbs of Polish city annexed to the Third Reich by the Nazis. The camp, initially constructed as one more concentration camp similar to the ones the Nazis had been setting up since the early 1930s, was established for the mass arrest of Poles, which filled local prisons beyond the capacity. It functioned in this role throughout its existence, and even when it also became the largest of the extermination centers in 1942. The PAJF asked candidates to describe what conditions, ideologies, and ideas made the Poles targets of Nazi hatred, and how this led to their subsequent incarceration, enslavement, and extermination by the Third Reich. Sources and references materials are available at polemjournal.com. Below is her essay. While it can be difficult to discern the origin of ethnic tensions and hostilities between countries, the conditions that made Poles the target of Nazi hatred are well documented after a glimpse into the mentality of the Third Reich. Germany's invasion of Poland in 1939 was not only a military conquest, but also the beginning of the Second World War and a major step in implementing the Nazis' vision for Europe. The Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp, Poland served both as a center of the genocide of Jews and as a tool to subjugate the Polish population. A plethora of conditions ideologies and ideas powered the Nazi actions and led to many forms of oppression, all serving to justify the greater purpose that it proclaimed. The Nazi Party utilized propaganda and heightened nationalism as a catalyst of disdain toward Poles, combining existing tensions with manufactured beliefs to sway public sentiments and justify the eradication of the Polish state and its people. Rather than considering World War II to be an isolated event from the rest of the 20th century, it's critical to draw the catastrophic roots back to the end of World War I. Many Germans felt that the war had ended too hastily, as the end helped Germans toward the belief that the war had not ended in military defeat, but in a draw. If the widespread belief, or at least a strong belief among a select few, was that the war could have ended differently, then such dissatisfaction may have fueled the belief that a new regime was needed. In other words, a German such as Adolf Hitler may have been consumed by the national rhetoric at the time and grew increasingly disapproving of both the war's end and the government handling of the war. Wow. Other scholars have commented on the country's dissatisfaction with Poland, in particular noting that all German statesmen were Hitler aimed at the return, not just Danzig and the Polish quarter, but also Eastern Upper Silesia, continuous verbalization of the Treaty of Versailles. Wrongdoing in Poland's acquisition of territory would have made the Poles prime targets of military retribution. The Nazis did not have to create a military justification to attack Poland, but rather acted on the sentiment that already existed. Wow. As a perfect pretext for invading their eastern neighbors, the Nazis had to create an additional rationale that would convince their German citizens that violence was necessary. The idea of a military war was made even more powerful when combined with a narrative of German survival. The Nazi Party understood this, with Hitler necessitating that means are found to forestall the danger of starvation and misery in our time. The option the Germans ultimately chose was the pursuit of Lebensraum, a living space. Since the country's population continued to expand while its borders remained stagnant, Hitler predicted that growth was not possible without the acquisition of a new territory into which German could settle. The idea of Lebensraum became not just a romantic yearning for a return to the East, but a vital strategic component, swaying public opinion to believe that there was no choice in the matter. Combining the propaganda of an existential crisis with the charging of the Treaty of Versailles allowed the Nazis to identify the Poles, their neighbors, as one of the first major targets of aggression. Wow. Poland has seen a country that had taken significant territory from Germany after World War I and as a place that could provide an immediate solution to Germany's land demands. Seeking further justification for the necessity to invade Europe, the Third Reich created a hierarchy that placed their physical characteristics above those of others and used this ideology to ignite a racial war. Although the contempt of the Nazis towards Jews and Roma is widely known as being a large focus of historical research, discussion of sentiment concerning Slavic racial inferiority is less frequently addressed. Rather than being of Aryan blood and fitting the traditional stereotype analyzed by the Germans, Poles, Russians, Ukrainians, Czechs, Slovaks, and Serbs were seen as adulterated and mixed races. Poland in particular appeared to conform precisely to the Nazi nightmare vision, as it was home to both a large Slavic population and a significant community of Jews. Since the Nazi Party continuously reiterated such beliefs and reminded its citizens of the racial hierarchy, continued exposure to such rhetoric dehumanized Poles in German eyes and made it easier to justify incarceration and enslavement. Placing Germany at the top will make it easier to enforce its will on another group by manipulating the population into believing that cruel atrocities are morally justified or even necessitated by the aforementioned survival ideology. Simply having former German land and offering Lebanonism made Poland a prime target for invasion, but offering an ideological base for the Third Reich to carry out its racial war was the ultimate catalyst. Germany's desire to target Poles was not only rooted in past transgressions and ethnic differences, but also in geostrategic considerations such as country's infrastructure and positioning in Europe. Poland's central positioning made it logistically efficient for the Nazis to carry out deportations and mass exterminations with existing railroads, efficient transportation of those deemed racially inferior. Having access to developed infrastructure and resources further pushed the ideology that the invasion of Poland was a necessity. Poland's location and infrastructure itself may not have caused Nazi hatred on its own, but the advantages of the land likely encouraged the regime to invent reasons for that hatred. The German government and leaders, recognizing the benefits of owning Polish land and resources, may have felt a greater motivation to strengthen the animosity of its citizens towards Poles under other pretenses, such as that of race. Racial ideology mainly functioned as a public front to persuade the population, while those in power simultaneously recognized Poland's geostrategic importance, particularly infrastructure, as a crucial military advantage. Wow. A multitude of ideologies and conditions made Poles targets of Nazi hatred, but the consequences went far beyond incarceration and relocation. Upon entering Poland, the Nazi undertook a systematic destruction of Polish culture, identity, and intelligence, dehumanizing its inhabitants and leaving a vast trail of atrocities. While all Poles were considered inferior, the Nazi primarily targeted those belonging to the nobility and intelligentsia. The immediate goal was to remove those Poles seen as most capable of organizing resistance to German rule and to terrorize the Polish population into submission, prioritizing the extermination of the upper class and creating a power vacuum at the top of the Polish resistance allowed the Nazis to fill the gap, indoctrinating other Poles into the idea that they were at the bottom of the hierarchy. Eliminating the Polish elite would quell or at least minimize the chance of organized resistance. Adolf Hitler explicitly stated that Poles may have only one master, a German. Two masters cannot exist side by side. Hitler reinforced the racial hierarchy by presenting a natural order that led his people to view domination and violence as justified. Interestingly, Hitler is acknowledging that the Poles are capable of having their own leader, but should not. This sly giveaway implies Hitler's acknowledgement that many Poles were quite intelligent and had an abundance of skill and knowledge, yet he had to continue his manufactured charade that the Polish ethnicity was inferior. The Nazi tailored their oppression based on social class, targeting groups according to their influence and usefulness to the German state. A substantial majority of the Polish population was not well educated, as nearly three-fourths of the population were peasants or architectural laborers and another fifth industrial workers. This clear separation of class made it easier for the Nazis to control the largely uneducated population, as they could focus on suppressing the small group of political, religious, and intellectual leaders. Naturally, the upper class was best equipped to lead any type of revolution, as they were particularly predisposed to resist the occupant and were therefore labeled as political prisoners. The intelligentsia served little purpose to the Third Reich, since their ideas and education were considered inherently Polish and consequently not compatible with the Nazis' vision for Europe. Educated Poles were also less likely to accept German occupation, consistently remembering the Poland that once existed and imagining the Poland they could help build. On the contrary, the peasants and industrial workers were not seen as significant threats, but rather as useful laborers with tangible skills that could be put to use in production for the benefit of the Nazis. Coerced labor for the state was rampant, as Nazi officials imposed a labor obligation upon able-bodied Poles that came to include children as young as 12. In effect, Poles were forced into the very war machine that enslaved them, a system that continued to operate across the rest of Europe. Additionally, the targeting of young children served a greater purpose by securing the future of the Third Reich. Nazi hatred of the Polish nation was extremely evident in the effort to strip Poles of their historical identity and promote the process of Germanization. In addition to exterminating countless numbers of Poles and destroying large parts of the country, the Nazis made a calculated effort to ensure that the future of Poland was bleak. Forcing young children into labor served the dual purpose of taking them out of schools and away from their families, in an effort to minimize their intellect under the mindset that knowledge is power. German officials decreed that Polish children's schooling end after a few years of elementary education. Depriving even a single generation of education could trigger a compounding effect in which each success generation placed less value on intellectual development, ultimately serving the Nazis by eliminating potential future resistors. For the Third Reich, the very existence of Polish society and culture posed a threat to the dream of widespread germination. Accordingly, the Nazis began targeting Polish heritage throughout the country as they renamed streets and cities, seized industrial firms, and closed down the churches so ingrained in Polish culture, given its prominent role in the lives of Poles. Catholicism, in particular, was subject to intense scrutiny and hatred. Religion often serves as a source of strength, helping people preserve when all courage seems lost. The Third Reich, clearly aware of the church's authority, committed a massive attack against what had long served as the foundational bond of the Polish people. For the Third Reich, the very existence of Polish society and culture posed a threat to the dream of widespread Germanization. While the Nazis committed countless atrocities against the Polish people, none demonstrated their hatred more starkly than the systematic dehumanization within the concentration camps. As the war progressed and more Poles were deported, their value as human beings diminished entirely in the eyes of their oppressors. Poles, both Jewish and non-Jewish, endured the horrors of the camps at an accelerated pace. As the war progressed and the Germans faced diminishing prospects of victory, their focus increasingly shifted toward the final solution. In other words, Nazis' hatred, which had initially manifested in less violent policies aimed at Germanization, escalated into mass genocide and the systematic dehumanization of those imprisoned in the camps. The reality of this dehumanization is chilling, captured by Borowski, a survivor of Auschwitz, who recalled that while playing soccer in the camp behind his back between one corner kick and the next, they had gassed 3,000 people. Adolf Hitler and his party were able to adapt and reshape public ideology to fit the needs of the moment. When the Polish population was viewed as useful and productive, ideology dictated that they be Germanized and used as labor. With the establishment of the death camps and the unveiling of Nazi goals, the fabricated ideology shifted once again, depicting Poles as subhuman and marked for extermination. Auschwitz, long liberated from the Nazi, continues to serve as a stark reminder of the immeasurable suffering that occurred in the camps and throughout the world during World War II. The Third Reich unleashed waves of terror that permeated all facets of life and led to the incarceration, enslavement, and extermination of many ethnic and racial groups. Hitler and the Nazis invoked a combination of factors, including resentment over World War I, the demand for Lebensraum, Poland's central location in Europe, and their belief in racial hierarchy to construct a justification for launching the war. Nazi hatred towards Poles in particular shifted in its ideology and application throughout the war, beginning with Germanization and culminating in the creation of death camps for mass genocide. The legacy of these atrocities endures as a powerful statement to the consequences of hatred, ideology, and systematic dehumanization, emphasizing the need to remember and learn from this dark chapter of history. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from the October-November 2025 issue of the Polish American Journal. We read from the Polish American Journal every Saturday at 3 p.m. Your reader has been Janice Marie Hunt. Thank you for listening.